Fellow Mentors, welcome to our podcast series, Mentorships in Education, brought to you by Just Education at justeducationfirst.com. I am your host, Judy Epstein. I am very excited about the wide range of experts who have volunteered to give up their time and expertise. They will share their innovative ideas, their exciting perspectives, their rich resources, and their research with us. Please continue to delve into these topics on their websites and with your legal counsel, healthcare provider, and education professional. Our guests will have information that will be relevant to mentors supporting struggling students, parents, teachers, administrators, legal support, and health professionals. We will address all levels of education with issues that affect academic performance. Our goal is to open discussions and introduce a variety of approaches to those searching for information in a free venue. So, mentors, let me introduce our guest for today. Hello, mentors. This is Judy Epstein, your host. In creating the podcast, I have and will continue to try to group guests to create what I'm calling mini-series. And group them together on related issues. So far, we've discussed dyslexia, ADHD, ADD, reading challenges. We've looked at nutrition as an approach to working with kids who have alternative learning styles. And our guests have all been well-respected professionals in their field. They are coming from around the world. We have a wonderful, exciting lineup coming this fall of people from so many different countries. But it occurred to me in speaking to the guest that I'm going to introduce you to today that there is a large portion of our audience that I have missed. And that audience are the parents who themselves are struggling with either a diagnosis or an assumption of ADD or dyslexia or many other alphabet soup diagnoses. And in speaking with our guest today, I realized that he would be a wonderful person to invite because he works with parents. And I want to incorporate the needs of parents who are trying to be good role models for their children as they are also struggling with their own dysfunctions, I guess is the word, in either work or at home. And I think that our guest today can help us put us on the right path to help us get a handle on that. It's my pleasure to introduce to you today Mark Julian from Virginia. And doesn't have a really heavy southern accent, so I can understand him very clearly. Mark, welcome.
Thank you very much. Well, just so it's consistent as far as the accent, I was actually born in Washington, D.C., and grew up in Arlington. So I think the local accent is sort of, what is that called? Central. I can't think of the term for the accent, but it's the one that they used to use to train broadcasters.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Mid-Atlantic.
Before we get into you a little bit in our discussion, I would like to fill in some of your background with our mentors who are listening. And I had to look up, actually, the letters after your name, the CPCC, because I had never seen those before. Mark is a CPCC, and I looked that up, and it's a Certified Professional Co-active coach, and maybe you can explain that a little bit later. He has been a lifelong entrepreneur and a personal performance specialist. He's a brain health coach interesting term. We can talk about that also. Mm-hmm. And a coach for adults primarily, or older students with ADD and ADHD. His clients learn more about their specific diagnosis because there are many types of ADD and ADHD, and different symptoms present depending upon the type that you have. They work together as a team, and they use researched, time-tested, and evidence-based techniques to produce scalable solutions and measurable outcomes. Some of the methods that Mark uses are mentoring, self-discovery, team collaboration, and mindfulness. We're going to get into all of these later on. As a result, his clients, he feels, and from the feedback he's received, have a more peaceful and satisfying inner life, as I assume also are a little more organized from a day-to-day basis and a little more productive. So, Mark, let me start by asking you a little bit about your view of what ADD is, ADHD, and how you're finding it affects the processing of information that takes place with the people that you're working with.
Great. Thank you, Judy. One thing, I'm a little fussy about it, and of course I've wound up creating a little bit of a problem for myself. For most of my time as an ADD coach, I used the term ADHD, and I was very sort of self-correcting and diligent about making sure I used it. And I did that because I wanted to say, don't forget the H. Even if it's not noticeably present, my theory is that for those of us that don't show the external H, it's actually internalized and into the brain, and the brain takes it on as its task. So where movement in a child, sometimes, you know, considered, you know, sporadic and uncontrollable, you know, just fidgeting and, you know, can't stop doing this. You know, I spent most of junior high school curiously noticing how my leg bounced when I was sitting there in the classroom, you know, and I would just...
As I'm sitting here with my leg bouncing up and down. Yeah.
Okay.
About mindfulness.
Well, I could not see that, so I didn't know, Judy. But, you know, the activity that seems to come up with the H, the hyperactive part, sometimes it's conditioned out of us, and, you know, circumstantially we have the awareness that, okay, people are looking, maybe I won't bounce, you know, maybe I won't jump around and run. And when that is the case, we kind of forget the H, but the H also tends to, again, be picked up, I believe, by the brain. And actually, it works faster and harder trying to create the same type of release of act of another activity that the brain wants to be present in order to be able to synchronize and to be able to work within a framework as opposed to a framework of stillness and silence. which some of our brains have a predisposition to tend to want to avert away from stillness and silence and into motion and activity. And in fact, it's not something, in my view, to be fought with. It's something actually to be worked with and to use cooperatively, because there are many instances where multitasking or having different kinds of stimuli are actually a productive help, as opposed to, you know, sort of sequestering yourself in this motionless environment. It can be very helpful.
We had on a little while ago, Dr. Michael Hart was a neuropsychologist, and he talked a little bit about the physical differences that have been noted on the brains of people who are diagnosed with ADHD, and that it's not just a manifestation in behavior, but it's actually a physical difference. And just to anecdotally mention to you that I am ADHD. Two of my sons are ADHD. And one of them, when he was in high school, used to have the radio blaring in his room all the time while he was doing homework. He's an excellent student, so I really couldn't argue with him about it, except I never understood why he needed the radio. And it wasn't until many years later that I've heard from other people, as you are saying, that he needed it because it helped him focus. With me, it would have been so distracting. And yet we both have the same diagnosis of ADHD. So everybody is very different.
And that's so, that's really, I think, a very important thing, because it can be even tuned down to certain kinds of music. And just as you say, volume level, etc., it's a very individualized thing, and we basically can use it effectively if we allow ourselves to experiment a little bit. And that's another thing that is helpful in having a partner, if you will, because you're able to share information and get feedback, and questions are raised that we might not raise ourselves, but someone else is more free to raise, because they're hearing about the individual's experience with music and able to offer suggestions to say, hey, well, what about this? What about that? Mm-hmm. And that can help.
Does this kind of relate to your referring to the ordinary working consciousness? I mean, becoming aware of what works for us, what doesn't work for us. Is that what that means? I'm not sure what that means.
I saw in a very kind message from you a reference to that, and I'm not sure, I don't recall the context, What I can say is this, what I am pointing to when I refer to ordinary consciousness is our daily working consciousness, where we actually slip in and out of habituated thought patterns based on circumstances and situations. And this is not, there's nothing wrong with this. In fact, it's how our brains work. However, it is divided. In other words, our attention is typically divided it's a habituated pattern for the good reason that we may want to or need to be available for something else. So it's already, it comes from its own perspective. And the perspective is preformed. So we already have certain assumptions and expectations there when we roll into that habituated state of consciousness.
You know? So you help people when you're working with, you know, older kids, adults. You help them to explore and become aware of in a mindfulness kind of way, perhaps, if I'm using that correctly, yeah. What their way is, what it is that works for them. They may not be aware of what they are doing that works and what doesn't work. Is that fair?
Yes, it is. Of course, we narrow that down because typically someone comes to coaching with some specific issues that are standing out. You know, so these are, we label them problems, right? So we call them problems and we look for solutions to those problems. The difference in the state of consciousness that I find most useful is that if you're in problem-solving mode, you're actually searching the content of your own brain, so your own experience, you're searching content specific. And that's a stage of focus that is labeled pointed focus. So you're using pointed focus. That's a kind of focus that you also might use, for instance, if you're taking a test or if you're filling out a tax return. It has a sharp crispness and a seeking energy to it, where you're looking through the files of your own brain, you know, to come up with the content and the solution. And that's a tight kind of focus. So it's referred to as pointed focus. Mm-hmm. So after 15 minutes with your tax return, if you happen to be invited to take a walk outside and you do that, you might notice a sharp contrast between, wow, I feel a little bit differently. And you also might notice that some things are coming up for you about maybe where to look for or another way that is possible for you to recover that receipt or find that piece of information that you weren't able to find when you were filling out the tax return. Now something is coming to you. Because you've actually taken the pressure off of it has to be content that I'm finding here as opposed to maybe anywhere in the world. So you're more available. And that is that example would illustrate the difference between pointed focus and diffuse focus when you have moved outside and you're getting into motion. Our brains are naturally programmed and conditioned to begin to become aware of a much broader area. So you're not focusing on a piece of paper and a specific thing that you need to get an answer for, you're now simply generally more aware and available. And it actually changes your perception of what's available, because you're in a different mode of operating your own brain.
I can't tell you how often I will be focused on something, trying to write a something that I need to develop, and can't think of the words, and can't, it doesn't sound right to me. I can't say what I want to say, and I leave it alone, and I go to the gym, or I go out and walk the dog, and while that's happening, I go, oh, I just thought of the word, or I just thought of the phrase, or I have a clearer picture of what it is that I want to say, and then I can come back and write it down. My guess would be that most people have had that experience.
That, yeah, I think so, too.
Mark, you have written a book. You are an author. You have, the book is How to Be with His ADHD. I think one of the questions that I asked you is, who's his? Can you talk a little bit about that in the context of some of the things that you've mentioned? You talk about different ways your brain operates. You've mentioned, in something I read, said a playful mode, an operating mode, that you talk about the perspective of the brain and what it is trying to do. Talk a little bit about your book, maybe. Again, the title is How to Be with His ADHD. And what was the purpose of writing that, and how is that going to be supportive of the mentors that are listening?
Great, great question. Well, actually, great series of questions in that.
I like to get you going.
Yeah, great. Well, the way that the title came was after a lot of pointed focus wheel spinning on my part, I finally landed on a way to approach the book, which was if I was speaking with a person, this was is an imaginary person that was in a relationship with a husband, and then it shifts back and forth. Sometimes it's a child with ADHD, but more often than not, it's a partner with ADHD. And it's an invitation actually into beginning to not so much experience the ADHD experience, but to experience the fundamental, you could say atomic levels that our brains actually do very important things that are outside of our common everyday awareness. Things like beginning to construct perspectives, which that is one of the fundamental functions of a brain, of the human brain, is to begin to structure so that it has a place certain that it is oriented to. So it begins to create a perspective based on the relationship expectations, but there are other factors too that begin to happen. But as I said, most people I'll go back to the tax return analogy, people doing a tax return, most people are in pointed focus. Not everyone is in pointed focus, or you could say maybe not everyone's pointed focus is the same, right? So it's very individualized, but of course, when you get down to something that could be described as an atomic level, every little thing makes a big difference as it moves exponentially into action and into form. You know, it's a very tiny inner thing, but it begins to make a big difference. This is how ultimately personalities are formed.
What is it that you are trying, what message, what basic information are you trying to get the reader of your book to understand? When they read your book, what is it you want them to come away with?
To come away with an understanding that there are possibilities and that change is something that is available and is available to them and to their partner.
Okay. So I had a feeling you were going to say something about that. And that kind of is a good segue for me because I want to go back a little bit to some of the techniques that we mentioned that you use, the mentoring, the self-discovery, the team collaboration, the mindfulness. We may not have time to go into all of them, but if you were working with someone that was open to change, you work with people on an individual basis, it's not a group, every session is individualized. How do you use some of these techniques to develop a path moving forward with the person that you're working with?
That comes, and that points to the CPCC part of being a certified coactive coach.
Okay.
And coactivity means, in this application, it means finding out through the relationship what is important to the client. What where is the energy flow high as opposed to low? And using a high energy flow as a catalyst into creating a request or an inquiry or a challenge to the client is an advantage because there is already an active flow of energy, aka interest, is already there. And interest is something that, again, one of my theories is, interest is actually a product of the brain, and it is produced. And it is produced by a lot of small steps that either are met with resistance, which tends to stop interest, or where the path is clear, there is flow. And where there is flow, you know, what we can say is the old saying, where energy flows, attention goes, or where attention goes, energy flows. And I don't remember which one is correct, but what I found is both are correct, because energy and attention are always running parallel in our circuitry.
I like that. I like that. That's a great quote. I'm going to borrow that from you.
Please, I borrowed it.
If someone who's working with you, I would imagine the major criteria for them is that they're coming to meet with you and because they're looking for other ways. So I guess the major criteria is that people are open to changing how they're doing things. And I know from working with the people that I work with, where they say they're open to changing and doing something, very often that isn't the case. Is that something that you struggle with when you're working with individuals?
Well, I have met with that issue, and I don't struggle with it because it becomes a truth that's revealed. A person can say they're open and then is resistant to anything other than the pathway to solutions that they, well, then they're not open, and you have the evidence.
Right.
So you can say, and what I've learned is that people use words differently, right? I mean, even though we have dictionaries and things, you can find a word and you can see it has 30 different uses and ways that it can be applied. So openness means on a very fundamental level, there really is openness, where you're willing to entertain or examine a possibility. On the other hand, it can also become very, very clear that if there's no energy for a different direction, if it's a constant fight of, no, let's go back, then I can't work with someone who is not open to another perspective, another point of view. And so the old saying in coaching is, if you keep doing what you've always done, you'll keep getting what you always got, right?
That's the definition of insanity.
Well,
it is. I usually respond to the kids I work mostly with middle school and high school students, and I'll say, well, are you open to trying this way? And they'll go, well, I am, but I get the but, and but this is what I've done and this is how it works, and you're right, you can't argue with that, but my response is usually, and how is that working for you? Is it working for you? Are you achieving the level of success that you see yourself achieving doing it that way? And usually the response is no. And I often quote that as the definition of insanity, banging your head against the wall and expecting a different result.
Yeah.
So I want to get to another quote of yours. I have a couple of them that I really like, but briefly, I just want to touch on your perspective on medication. Do you ever recommend that someone see someone to go on medication? Do you see it as sometimes important part of the process? How do you see medication?
Yeah, I see medication as a tool something that certainly anyone may be able to benefit from. And I think that medication is, it is a personal, individual choice. Mm-hmm. And it's, there is nothing inherently bad as far as I'm concerned. And again, I haven't exhaustively researched all contraindications. One thing, though, that I do like to emphasize, and that is for children, if they are, if medication is used as a part of, primarily as a behavior modification, that's one sort of caution light that I think is worth considering looking at. Not to say that means no, it just means cautionary. Well, let me just get to the essence of it. The essence of it is that depending on the child's age and their own personal experience and their own bias towards how they self-manage, that medication can serve even better ends if medication is used along with some stimulus into self-examination, observation, I should say, scratch the examination part, self-observation, because stimulant medication speeds up the processes of the brain, theoretically and scientifically, by producing reactions that create neuroprocessors to be more active in parts of the brain where they otherwise are not. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that goes back to your very early question, you know, what is ADHD? Mm-hmm. And, there are so many ways to talk about that, but one way is scientifically, ADHD is one of the characteristics is that there is irregular or even absent neuroprocessing activity within parts of the brain. So that parts of the brain, specifically temporal lobes, prefrontal cortex, cerebellum, where executive function is used, we associate that with the prefrontal cortex, but we forget that the temporal lobes and the cerebellum are also supportive in other processes of that prefrontal cortex. So even though the ability to access prefrontal cortex, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, in the prefrontal cortex only for executive function, it absolutely is supported by
right.
temporal lobe and cerebellum. And if communications are interrupted or disruptive or inconsistent, which is the most typical, then what you're doing with medication and without any self growth and discovery of the process, you're actually locking that person into their brain, and their brain may not be producing the happiest situation and circumstance. So stimulant medication can create a kind of solemnness, and in some cases even lead to a form of depression. And so that's something that I caution.
You've said that much more eloquently than I have. I feel validated by what you say, because we agree. Many of my students don't want to go on medication, and I tell them that it is a tool to, I can't teach them something unless I can have their attention. I said, if you and I can work together, this medication is not something that you need to necessarily be on your whole life. It's just a tool for to learn some of the skills and strategies that you might need to function with the type of brain that you have. It doesn't mean that you'll be on it forever. And when someone says that to them, then they're a little more amenable to taking the medication. I have had some students who have complained about the way they feel on the medication, but where they know it's just going to be for a fixed period of time, a year, maybe 2 years, until we're able to make some headway on a process that they need to do in order to be successful. And I've had quite a few kids go off medication after 3 or 4 years, 2, 3 years, because they've kind of learned a structure that they need to keep around them in order to do what they need to do. And they're using the tools they need to do, whether it's a checklist or a calendar or a organized backpack or whatever it is. They've learned some of the tools they need to do in order to be successful. And they're much more apt to keep that up because of the success they're having by doing it. So you said it, I think we said the same thing. You said it more eloquently than I did. But certainly medication is a tool. It's not an answer to the situation. It needs to be in cooperation with some other support structures put in place. And that leads me to, we talked about you writing a book. I'm also aware that you have boot camps.
Yes.
I want you to talk a little bit about these boot camps and who are they designed for?
Well, the boot camp is actually for parents with children with ADD.
Oh, perfect. Are you listening to that, everybody?
And it's an intensive. I design it each boot camp, but it's eight sessions, which are roughly 60-minute sessions, done very much like this, meaning on Zoom or on the phone, and we do that. Frankly, because first of all, I like working from home, and second of all, there is far less resistance in the process of making an appointment. It can be, there are a lot of steps of resistance when it comes to, okay, I have to get in the car. I have to travel to your locale. I have to get parked, et cetera, the timing, et cetera. Whereas, a safe, secure, familiar spot where I can have privacy for 1 hour. There's very little resistance in that compared to having to show up face to face at a specific location. So I think it's kind of a win-win. It broadens the number of people and locations that I can serve, and at the same time makes it easy for busy people to still be able to make a commitment.
Now, Ed Halliwell, who's a renowned author on books relating to ADD, I believe he wrote Driven by Distraction, and several others that I've
and
read.
Delivered from Distraction.
and what delivered from Distraction.
That was his second book.
In a way, that might be what your boot camp is going to do for people, deliver them from distraction. Oh. But he says the single most effective tool for people who are struggling with ADD and ADHD is to have a mentor, some guidance, a coach of some kind. So your boot camp provides that, and they are one-on-one sessions. Is that correct?
Yes, they are. And what we focus on, and I can't give you a predetermined sort of pedagogy, because it's personal. In other words, it really each program is going to develop after the initial meeting, which is our first call, and we find out what the areas are that that are bringing conflict, or where someone wants to produce some kind of change. And, there are a lot of overlaps between on the topic name, but the specifics of getting into the topic, that becomes very much an individualized thing. It, may have to do with, my son has this resistance to that, or I have this resistance to that, or my daughter has her concerns in one area, is very good at looking good but really isn't tracking with me at all, whatever it might be. I feel I can't get through to her based on this. She won't say it, but this is what I think. An investigation arises from that. So what we do with parents is I coach them into a process, and process is very important in really in everything that I do, because I believe that process is actually the thing that habituates our thought patterns. And our ultimately, how we engage and interact. But it matters on a thinking level, because that's what we're dealing with ADHD. We are dealing with the human brain. And, we have to respect the fact that the human brain is the most complex organ in the known universe, bar none, and not even a little bit, but by a long shot. So it is also so incredibly powerful, because it impacts on everything we do.
Now, I know we're talking about working with parents whose children are ADHD or parents who themselves are ADD or ADHD and struggling to try and be a mentor for their children. But you also work with professionals who are having difficulty organizing their daily routines and want to become more effective in their jobs and develop skills to be able to achieve those that success that they're looking for. So when you meet with them in these boot camp sessions, do you brainstorm with them, I'm assuming, and kind of develop a list of all the different areas that they want to make changes and then kind of focus on where you're going to begin to work? Because I don't imagine you can do everything at once.
Right. No. And in fact, that's one of my approaches. You know, it depends on the individual, but mm-hmm. for those that like or have an interest, for instance, in things spiritual or maybe the study of religions. I often refer to the Zen master, his last name, same as the motorcycle, Suzuki, is credited with having brought Zen to the Western world via America in the 1950s. And Master, he was referred to as Master Suzuki, was asked at one of his talks, you know, what is the most important thing in Zen? And he paused and, you know, the finger goes up and he says, the most important thing in Zen is for you to find out what is the most important thing.
I love that.
And what we can know and what, being present in our consciousness allows us, that's a prerequisite. You don't know what is the most important thing unless you can be present. Otherwise, you'll be referring to content that is old.
I love that.
And you'll be stuck or hung up on some reaction, response, or energetic field that hijacks your attention, as opposed to your attention being free and flowing and simply present.
You have a mathematical equation after this discussion, I think, would fit in here very nicely.
Okay, yeah.
Because you talk about the aptitude. So many people who have ADD or ADHD are certainly capable. And you want to be able to work with them and have them be receptive to the possibility of doing things in different ways. So their aptitude is there. And aptitude plus attitude, which I'm assuming has to do with how you approach some of the challenges that we have. Aptitude plus attitude equals altitude, which I love, how high you can rise. Am I presenting that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Exactly. I love that so much. I have some students that I meet sometimes in the library, and I made a banner of that, and I put it on the desk in front of my students, and they invariably will look at it after a few minutes and say, oh, what's this? And we get into a discussion about it. What do you think it means? And how do you think it applies to you? And what part of this are you having difficulty with? And what is your goal? You know, what is your altitude? What is your goal? So I think it has so many applications that I really have enjoyed using it. I haven't told you, but I have enjoyed using
it. Wow. And you've used it amazingly. So I'm inspired now.
if I just told them that it wouldn't mean anything.
Right.
If I put it on the table as a banner, a thin banner where you might write an equation, you know, and have them solve the equation. I put them on the table and we might even start a session and they haven't noticed it. I don't really say anything about it. And then all of a sudden one of them will, you know, they'll say, what is this? Sometimes they notice it right away. And it generates a great discussion, particularly if it's someone who is giving me a hard time about writing assignments down in an assignment book because they're going to remember them or something of that nature. So it kind of opens up a discussion, and I just love that. I'm going to jump to another topic because you and I could talk about this for a little while, but you mentioned to me the four circles approach. And I am not familiar with that at all. And if you could kind of talk about that a little bit, I'd like to understand a little bit more about what that is.
Yes. This comes from actually, again, borrowed, because I borrow a lot.
Me too.
Okay. This is borrowed from Daniel Amen. If you're familiar with Dr. Amen of Amen Clinics. Daniel Amen is a double board certified psychiatrist and pediatric psychiatrist. That's the double part. He's sort of recognized and well known from his appearances on PBS. He's frequently used during their fundraisers. And he's also a bit of a psychiatrist to the stars, you know, so Hollywood. And but of course, not limited to that at all.
Right.
But he's used in documentaries and also in films and things. His work is a little bit outside of what is traditional psychiatric practice. He uses something called a SPECT scan. Which
does that have anything to do with the four circles, or is that something separate?
It does. Well, actually, yes, it does. It does relate to the four circles, and
okay.
Here's how. The four circles being, let's start with biological. Mm-hmm. So the four circles biologically are captured through the imaging process of the SPECT scan, which is actually a nuclear medicine device that images the brain based on blood flow, and something that is part of the presupposition is that blood flow and neural activity are compatible. And so the SPECT scan produces imagery that shows blood flow within the brain, both at rest and at work. So it really requires two sets of images to be taken at different times, and then compared. And so the one imaging is done at rest, and you can, you know, be just laying still, meditating, whatever. And the other one, you're actually given problems to solve. So you're moving into a kind of pointed focus, and you can see what is comparatively different. And this is very eye-opening and empowering to people that don't, well, even if you do know certain things about your brain, when you see your photos of your brain, this imaging and say photos, then this is dramatic. So it's color-coded so that the areas that are active in blood flow appear at different gradients of color, and the areas that are not active in blood flow appear to be absent in these images. It's like you could see a hole in your brain. What it's saying is there's an area of your brain that is not active at this time.
I'm not sure I'd want to see that.
Well, one thing that's very interesting is this, and I think this, you know, for your listeners, parents with, with children with ADD, and particularly people who believe they might have ADD, they're trying to work with a child with ADD. Here's what I saw, and because I was invited to, my certification as a brain health coach comes through Daniel Amen's brain health coaching program.
Wow.
So, we have a an informal partnership in that way. They refer clients, and what you can see is during a state where I am, where I was relaxed, there was a slightly lower prefrontal cortex activity and a considerably lower temporal lobe activity. It pointed to possibly ADD in a relaxed state. Mm-hmm. In an active state, you could see parts of that whole temporal lobe and prefrontal cortex go down, not up, down.
Wow.
And that is a brilliant scientific rendering of the rule in ADD coaching and teaching and training. The harder you push, the less result you will receive.
Wow. That's interesting. That is very interesting. I'm going to end with one of your other quotes, which is attention drives direction. And that kind of brings in everything that you've been saying with the focus, diffused focus, and what was the other term you used?
Pointed focus.
Pointed focus, yes.
Yeah.
Pointed focus and diffused focus. It's so important to have an understanding of what helps us maintain focus, because our attention, from what you're saying, is really about our being able to maintain a focus and go in a particular direction. And sometimes we have difficulty.
So what you figured out through your, yes, of course, you have a substantial training and understanding, but I don't know that you used that to say, take a break from working on the paper that's in front of you and then go walk the dog. But what you've noticed is that there's something that positive that occurs in that transition.
Yes.
And what I think, if you take away a snapshot, the snapshot is instead of grinding in the same place and trying to produce a result by just working harder, actually shifting and transitioning into other areas of focus or platforms from which you are viewing yourself, the world, your issues, etc. That is fundamentally some of the best medicine that you can offer yourself and others.
And what you've taught us is we need to be more mindful of that and be aware of what works for us and what doesn't work for us, and make a conscious decision to get up from the desk and take a walk with the dog, because as we have seen before, that's where we come up with some of our ideas, not when we're pushing at the desk to try and redo all the time. Sometimes we just need to get up, take a break, and take a walk. And I hadn't thought of it like that, but it is a conscious choice we make, an awareness that we need to have.
And when you do it, and you do it consciously, and you recognize the results, all of a sudden, there's a whole network of opportunities to fine-tune and to use that better and better and better. And what I mean by better is to serve the host that is having the experience, because they are the ones that are at the control panel. You have to have the tools to be able to, the tools and training to work that control panel. And that's my intention in working with adults at the boot camp programs.
Mark, I want to thank you so much for all the time that you've given us today and in preparation for this podcast. I want to remind our mentors that you have a book out called How to Be with His ADHD. And if anyone does want to contact you, Mark, where would they do that?
They can call me direct and at 703-362-2100. That's my client line, if you will.
Okay.
And but that's good for questions. And I'm very open and welcome that. Email is at Mark, M-A-R-K, at Mark Julian. Julian is Julian.com. And my website is markjulian.com.
Okay. We will post this on your bio. So that when people are listening to your podcast, they can see the posting and get all of this information as well. Thank you very much. I so much again appreciate your time.
Wonderful. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you, mentors, for joining us. I hope you will go to justeducationfirst.com and learn more about what we do. Look over the other topics that we have covered that have related to ADD, ADHD, nutritional alternative means of supporting your students, as well as dyslexia and reading concerns. We've had an array of very professional and well-informed guests, and we will continue to do that. Our podcasts are located on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and on our website. Thank you so much, and I wish you all a wonderful day. Thank you, mentors, for being with us today. If you found this podcast of value, please visit justeducationfirst.com to subscribe to our blog and Mentorship and Education podcast, so that you may continue the exploration with us. Our goal is to provide a free treasury of information for our listeners, so they can become acquainted with the amazing resources that we have available to us. We want to thank all of our guests for giving their time, and sharing their wealth of information with us. Please also visit their websites and explore more of their resources to further your pursuit of the topic. Hope to hear from you at justeducationfirst.com. Have a good week, and thank you.